Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody. Chris here. Just a reminder that this episode was recorded pre-lockdown, back when we could all be in a room together. And second reminder that this season episodes are coming weekly. So today we've got an interview episode, and next Thursday we will have Homo Sapiens Extra Lockdown Extended Edition. Enjoy listening.
Who was the chef who went to prison? Big American Martha Stewart.
Oh, yeah, Martha. Yeah, she went to prison. She came out, though.
My friend was her pen pal.
What?
Her pen pal.
Pen pal? I thought you said her pimper. You know, I could believe anything of Martha. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Cumming.
I'm Christopher Sweeney.
And this is Homo Sapiens.
Absolutely. Shall I say true story again? Because I say that every week.
True story.
True story.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You said. How are you, Alan? Tell me.
I'm pretty good.
Yeah?
I'm...
Springing your step over there, I see.
Springing my step. I've been cooking.
Lovely. What do you think?
I had a lovely cook. I've made a delicious... Well, I did tell you that I accidentally bought 8.5 kilograms of texturized vegetable protein. Because the bags in the picture did not seem as big as they were in real life. And I didn't look at the kilograms thing. And so I have industrial amounts of texturized vegetable protein in my in my house. So I'm trying to use them up by making delicious stews and chilies and things like that. So I've just made one today.
And when you say texturized vegetable protein, is that different to tofu?
Yes.
And what's the difference?
Well, tofu is fermented soy.
Oh, okay.
And isn't it? Yeah. And texturized vegetable protein is like dehydrated soybeans and vegetables,
I think. And nicer. Do you prefer it?
Yeah, because you put it in things and it gives a little texture. Kind of, it's slightly chewy, mm-hmm. makes it seem like mince, like a chili or something. It's not, you know, but it just gives things a texture. And it's you know, it's vegetable protein in a dish.
Have you tried soya sunflower mince?
Sunflower mince, like mint with an S or mince with a C-E?
C-E.
No.
So it's dried sunflower product. I don't know how it's made, but it tastes exactly like mint. So you can make like a chili con carne with it or a bolognese type thing.
So it's dehydrated. You put it in as a powder?
It kind of looks like a gravel.
I'm sure that was the look they were going for.
Do you think that's what the marketing department said?
Why don't you say try that for them?
Make
try this. It looks like gravel.
And it tastes like it too, Mom. Jeez, it's delicious.
Do you know that reminds me of you doing that funny American accent? I presume it was American. Is that what? There's a thing on YouTube that someone sent me once, which is like a hot dog. It's like a hot dog. It's a thing that you put a hot dog in, mm-hmm. and you sort of, you know, like a the way you slice an egg. You know, the way you, that thing, and you put
oh,
an
I love
egg
those.
In it, and then all the eggs are in slices. It's like that, but you do it with a hot dog, so it makes the hot dog have legs and arms.
Yes, I love those things.
and the wee boy in the commercial goes, "It's a toy you can eat." I learned how to make quesadillas because of Martha Stewart.
Really? Because you learned them on the show?
Yeah. Yeah, I could make you a quesadilla.
Did she? Okay.
And then also, what do you call it? We were making banana daiquiris as well, and it's kind of like in a live situation. I went, you know, the bananas are really good for diction. And she went, tell me more. And I went, that's it. That's all I know. That's just that someone told me the bananas are good for diction. I don't know why. Non-starter.
That's such a good impression.
I think she thought, oh. Because she does her, her, you know, her thing is, that's a good thing. That's the Martha Stewart sort of catchphrase.
Oh, is it?
That's a good thing. That's how she says it. And
you could play her in the biopic.
I could. I'd love that. There has been a biopic, actually. Kirsty, the lady who used to be in Cheers, Kirsty Alley played her.
Oh, yeah, really?
Kirsty Alley played her. It's really hilarious. You know, I find Martha, you should get Martha on this. That would be great.
Yes.
Next season. Yep, that's a good thing, Alan.
That's a good thing.
But anyway, we don't have Martha Stewart today. We have someone even better than Martha Stewart.
Similar. Add a little more 70s icon, and I think we've got Laurie Anderson.
Laurie Anderson, who's
week's guest.
She's such a legend, this woman, and just a darling. Most people know Laurie in the world, would know Laurie from Oh Superman, her big kind of electronic hit. But there's, you know...
Should we play 2.5 seconds of it that we can afford?
Okay. That's it.
That would be it. That's actually what it sounds like for those who haven't heard it.
But she's this amazing musician and performance artist and composer, has had an amazing career, is such a lovely woman, was married for a long time to the lovely Lou Reed.
Yeah.
And they were always so nice to me, actually. They came to one of my concerts.
Aww.
Yeah. And I'd just known her on and off in New York for ages. And she's just, and also this air of calm comes off her. And it's not a surprise to realize, to find out she's been a Buddhist for like decades and decades, since the 70s.
What is that, do you think? Because there is something about her and a lot of Buddhists, which is... there is something emanating from them. And it's like she's moving at 50% speed of everyone else. Mm. But it's not just that. There is, I just felt like...
inner calm.
A wash of calm. Yeah. Coming off her.
Yeah.
And I think one thing we were talking about when we were talking about this series, we were talking about icons and queer icons. Mm. And then it was like, well, you know, LGBT icons and blah, blah, blah. But there is something about, I think you said it about Laurie, that her sensibility is queer. You know, which is about rights and what is that, do you think?
What is a queer sensibility? I think it's actually about an openness to things other than your own experience and a compassion and a generosity and a respect for people.
Yes.
And just and that, you know, you think that everybody should have as good a go as you do. And I love, she says, we were talking, but we get onto religion at one point. Well, we're obviously talking about Buddhism, but we get onto more sort of conventional or organized religion, whatever you call it. But she says a great thing, that she thinks Jesus was gay.
Yes.
And he was so beautiful and tender, totally gay.
Yes, she outs Jesus. Which, to be honest, I think happened in Matthew, Mark, Luke or John. I can't quite remember.
Well, you know.
The book.
Someone who's... has dinner with only men at the, you know, he goes out. You know, you look at the Last Supper, it's just a bunch of guys all out for dinner. When does that happen when there's not a football match involved?
Very true.
Also, I think Jesus would have been, that's why I think it's so awful the way that Christianity, well, we'll talk about this in the thing as well, but the way that Christianity has been so hijacked by people who are bigoted, that Jesus was the most, like, he, you know, we all, we see all the thing about, you know, the poor people and sick people, but also prostitutes, sex workers. He was very kind and said, you know, help them, and told people to not be mean to them. And I totally think that Jesus, I'm sure there were instances of it, but we just don't, the Bible has been gay-raised, but I'm sure Jesus would have been all over marriage equality and equal rights for gay people. Yeah. And that's why I find it really awful in America when, you know, Christian groups who supposedly... promote and exhort us to have love and compassion for our fellow man, we're telling everyone that it was okay to think that some people should have less rights than others and not be able to live in peace and comfort. So I don't like the way that Christianity has been
hijacked.
Christianity is Jesus's name. Hello, Jesus Christianity. Yeah. Stop being mean, all you Christians. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Thank you for the reminder on that.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Pleasure. Now, I think we get into it,
Let's have Laurie Anderson. Let her speak for herself. Oh, no. First of all, though, shall we have some Agony Uncle questions?
Oh, thank God you're here.
Agony Uncle.
We should have got Laurie Anderson to do as a jingle.
Shit.
She'd do that.
Homo sapiens.
I like that.
A great piece about Moby Dick.
She did.
Yeah, amazing.
Oh, like a performance.
It was like an opera.
Yes.
But it was, and she invents instruments and everything. I mean, she's just a genius.
Do you want to read a couple of these?
Yes.
So let me.
Oh, here's one. So W writes, my best friend, in capital letters, so it must be really, really his best friend, has views I don't agree with. Anti-women, anti-gay rights. So I feel conflicted. Help. I think you should take this one initially, Christopher, while I calm down.
allow me to grab this nettle, Alan. Listen, they're your friend, so you got to talk it out. But there are some things which are not acceptable. And unless that person is not going to listen and understand about very basic stuff like women's rights, LGBT rights,
just,
you know?
Human rights, just decency, compassion. Yeah.
You know, you do not need to remain friends with that person.
I don't understand how they can be your best friend in capital letters and have these views. You're listening to this podcast. You're obviously not a misogynist or a homophobe. I'm just really curious about how you've not confronted this already, dealt with this already. I mean, I think you've got to just, well, send them this bloody link of this show.
Yeah.
And say, what the actual fuck?
That's what, this is what Chris and Alan think about you.
They don't like you.
Can you imagine if someone sent that to you and said, I've written into a show about you.
Welcome to my world. Try being famous on Twitter.
So, yeah, Anedra Taweb, this amazing online therapist who I adore, she says this thing, which I love, which is that you, just because you've been friends with someone for ages, does not mean you have to remain friends with them, you know? And sometimes we can let people carry on from a past life.
And also, I feel like you say you feel conflicted. I don't see how you can feel conflicted about you can love a person and obviously they can have different political views to you, but that's not conflicted if you've been open with them and told them how you feel and how you feel about their views. There should be no conflict there other than an ideological one that has been discussed.
And have you ever had that with friends of yours where you've realised that you have grown apart in that sense with stuff?
Yes. And I think, there's a reason why you grow apart as friends and a reason why you don't keep in touch with people. Mm-hmm. There's people in my family, extended family, that I have hugely different political, just humanist views to. And I can appreciate them, but I'm very clear with them that I do not agree with that side of them. I think that's the thing. You've got to just, obviously it's very difficult. It's a very difficult situation. We live in very polarized times. When you go home and with your family and your old friends, you're going to engage in these things. And of course you don't want the entire thing to be awful and just screaming about politics all the time. But I just think you've got to, everyone should lay their cards on the table.
Yeah.
And if someone doesn't want to lay their cards on the table because they know their views are offensive, then maybe they should think about changing their views.
There's a clue in that. But yeah, I don't think you feel like, you shouldn't ever have to feel like you have to acquiesce around people who have different views from you. It's okay to have different views.
No, I mean, yes.
Case in point.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Here's another person. This is from someone who wrote in to the website. The kind of women I am attracted to are always bad for me. How do I choose better, please? Well, first of all, person, I think you need to look at what are the commonalities of these women. There must be a pattern here. Mm-hmm. There must be some things. If they're bad for you, you have to look at what are the qualities they have that are bad, and you must avoid those in future. And then you've got to ask yourself, why am I attracted to people who have qualities that are bad for me?
Mm-hmm.
You think the thing, interesting thing about getting older is you see patterns, you see your behavioral patterns.
Yes.
And it seems to me like you have behavioral patterns because you're mentioning them in this tiny question. Mm-hmm. You just have to analyze them a bit better. Don't you think, Christopher?
I do. I think two things spring to mind. I think people like saying they're attracted to bad people. And I think that's not that helpful because You're attracted to who you're attracted to. Mm. And and that is, you can't change that. But you do also have to pull into your decision-making process as to whether this person is going to be, you know, good and all right for you and make you feel good about yourself. Because sometimes we're drawn to people who don't make us feel good about ourselves.
Totally.
And I think that I don't think there's an easy way around that. I think you have to go and have therapy, if I'm honest.
I think you've got to have therapy. But I think you've also got to, like, analyse things. Mm. Before, you know, obviously that's what therapy is, analysis. But you need to not just think, oh, I keep choosing all these bad people. Yeah, you do. Yeah. You're the common denominator here. But you know what I mean? Like, take some responsibility, yeah. I think, is basically what we're saying.
Yes, yes.
Then the last question we're going to have in this edition of...
Agony Uncle.
It is from B. Mm-hmm. If a close friend doesn't invite you to her wedding, what is the best response? I need drama.
Is that them saying I need drama?
Yes, I wouldn't say that. Yeah, they're saying I need drama. So it seems to me... you've got drama, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, because your best friend hasn't invited you to
that's drama.
Maybe she's not your best friend.
That's not a close friend.
Oh, no, a close friend. I'm so sorry. A close friend doesn't invite you to her wedding. What is the best response? I just sort of think, if you need drama, go and become an actor. I think just, like, don't see this. Someone's probably thought long and hard about who they invited to the wedding. Maybe they can't afford to have many people to the wedding. Maybe they don't like you that much. You just have to... I think the drama should not be because you need it or you want it or you want to create it. Just go and ask them. But if you're upset about it, mm-hmm. say, oh, I was upset you didn't invite me to your wedding. Mm-hmm. And see what they say. But don't... I don't know. I don't like that question.
Also, I think people lose their minds over weddings. And it's like, look, it's like, have one if you want one. Fine, but it doesn't matter who's invited, who's not invited. It doesn't matter what you eat, all that crap. I think it's like this lightning. It's this lightning rod or magnet for the worst behavior in people. And I remember when I was getting married, me and my husband William, like, we got married and just did it all. I sorted it all out ourselves.
Yeah,
which I thought was quite funny because I felt like there was a vague vibe in the air, like as if the boys were pretending to have a wedding. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, the boys are getting married with this sort of like, yeah, they're doing this thing. I felt like, you know, when you do a puppet show behind the sofa for your family. It's a bit like, felt a bit like that.
I think it's an interesting thing. I think we live in different times. I think, you know, the whole thing of like, you know, you have to invite all your cousins because they invite you to their wedding, blah, 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 blah. That used to be a thing. And I think if you have a family setup that is measured only, the only currency of your family is that you have to invite them to things like weddings and funerals, then just don't. I think that we've got to move on from that. I mean, and we're in a transition now where people get married in different ways. Marriage means different things.
Yes.
And the act that you, if you think about it, why people should be at your wedding is to celebrate this union that you are entering into. Mm. If it's just about that they're getting some free food and a couple of glasses of warm champagne, then, you know, invite them in for dinner or just realise that that's not perhaps the best kind of energy to have around you. I think, like, both my weddings, I have, even when I got married the first time when I was very young and to a woman, we invited our parents to our own wedding. We did it all ourselves. We didn't feel duty bound to do that thing. I just think it's not, you know, it's actually when you think, what do you want from this wedding? Yes. If you want it to be something that's for your mum and your family to organise and for them to then give it to them and then take the consequences and shut up. If you want it to be your thing, own it and have some responsibility and just say to people, I'm so sorry, I didn't invite you because I didn't want to, wanted to have this number.
Yeah.
I, you know, couldn't afford it, whatever. So I just think this person, B, was it?
Yes.
Should
they probably
not seek out drama. There's enough going on in the world, darling, without you having to manufacture
it. True story.
So now, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, well, now we've solved all the world's problems. I think all of them.
You know who should be doing the agony? Uncle
Laurie Anderson.
Laurie Anderson.
Because that Buddhist has got some answers.
Let's hear her calming tones.
Let's hear it.
I wanted to ask you about your phone because I read something that you said that I thought was so wonderful where someone said, what's your favourite item or something? And you said, it's my phone. And it was the first time I'd heard, oh, it's funny that you're pulling your face, because it was the first time I'd heard someone say something really positive about their phone. And you said, it's my notebook. Yeah. It's how I get places. It's how I dot, dot, dot. And it's like, that is what it is. It's funny, but they are so demonised when in fact, this is a brilliant thing.
It's and I thought, useful.
Yeah, and I thought, what a wonderful relationship to have with something to just know what it's good for.
Yeah. It's changed how I use pockets too. So you want to have something nice to put it in, so you're like, because otherwise you're in a death grip with this.
Yeah, I find that when I'm walking along the street, I'm like, why am I holding my phone?
Yeah, put it down.
Yeah. Just, you know, the other night we went to this show and they did a thing where they took your mobile phone and they put it in this little bag and a little thing, it magnetically thinged, locked like that. So you had this little sort of sack with you, with your phone in it. You had to turn it off and so that you couldn't use, you know, you couldn't use your phone during the thing. And I loved it. Mm. It was so great. And then at the end, they had a little thing that went boop and it opened up and you got your phone out. But what, it was Hannah Gadsby, you know her? It was her show. And what she said that she loves about that is that it makes the pre-show audience hubbub come alive again. Because before shows now, you're very
everyone's
much
just hubbub online.
You're always the last thing you do is something involving your phone before you switch it off. Yeah. And so now when people don't have that, it's suddenly, you know.
There's an actual difference between the hubbub and the silence.
Yeah.
Last time I put my phone into a plastic bag was meditation course, and when I got it back, it was 2,500 messages.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How long was the meditation course?
It was about 10 days.
Oh, wow. Still though, that's 250 a day.
Yes, that's what I get.
Why do you get so many?
Because I'm popular. An idiot, you know, I like staying in touch with stupid
things.
I'm just deleting them all the time. Delete. It's like, that a very good feeling to put it away.
Mm. Yeah.
It's such a nice feeling.
Mm-hmm. You have this incredible calm demeanor. Like, you have this aura around
it's
you.
It's a facade.
But that's sort of what I wanted to ask you is, like, how did you become that? Because I think it's really important that people can understand that it's a process. Like, you don't necessarily always feel like that inside, but it is a really brilliant thing to be able to engage with meditation and all of that. And
I think we need it so much now. Mm. Yeah, we really do. And I guess one thing that helps me is that I gradually realized that it never, ever, ever, ever helps to panic. Mm-hmm. Never. It always makes it worse. Mm. So when things happen and there are things that genuinely do make you panic, you know, you've like something really bad happens. Just I just try to, well, really take a page from what you said. You just take a beat and kind of put it in some bigger perspective and just go, you know, it's going to be better if I try to see how beautiful things are.
Was there a point in your life where you're like, I need to change my perspective, and that's how you found Buddhism? Or
no, I was always I always was a sky worshiper.
Right.
When I was a little kid, I knew, like, whenever something really bad happened, the sky was always there, and I would look up and I was like, wow, I had this kind of like pagan thing. I was like, I come from there. I used to look at the sky a lot, probably because I'm from the Midwest and it was all sky, and I was like, I'm from there. It's so beautiful. It's freedom. And so that's available to everyone all the time, the sky.
Yeah.
So and also, by the time I've found out about Buddhism, there's all things about, you know, awareness of sky, and just that as your to get your sense of freedom and balance and perspective and beauty, and you know, it's what kind of meditation do you do?
I don't I don't know. It's not transcendental.
Right.
You
didn't pay $1,000 for your mantra.
No, I think that's so awful. I think I'm absolutely with you there. I think it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I think it attracts a sort of certain type of person that I could easily fall into, and I don't want to be that person. Because I think it's the very fact that you're being charged for it is the antithesis of what I think it's supposed to
pretty
be about.
Pretty much, yeah.
So I don't know, there's a place. We had a nice man called, I've forgotten his name. He came, there's a place called Mindful. Mm-hmm. It's a meditation sort of place. that you can go and do meditation classes and, you know, with other people. And then he came to our house and gave us sort of meditation coaching tips and stuff like that. So
what was the best tip you got?
Well, actually, it wasn't from him. It was from this app that I got. This other bloke was doing this app thing. And it was about, what was it? It was something don't react. I've forgotten now, but it was about when something happens, receive it and like basically take a beat before you react. And I can't, it was more eloquent than that. It was more of an eloquent sort of mantra.
That's eloquent. That's take a beat.
Yeah.
Just don't immediately do that. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, the beats are short when sometimes things happen to you and there's this millisecond where you're measuring it and somebody says something and you go, and you're deciding, is that good for me or bad for me? Mm. You know, and it's a millisecond long before you're evaluating what it is. And it's a really interesting moment to try to not care or... Mm.
Or have the freedom
or
to
not
assess.
Put it on the scale of like good or bad. Just kind of go, that's a thing that happened. I don't have to say plus or minus. You know, you're just it's another thing.
Because I'm always trying to elongate that moment because it's like I'm reacting before I'm even aware I've reacted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this guy was really rude to me a few weeks ago. And I was so proud of myself because it was I put in the longest break I've ever had.
How
and I was
long like, is your longest break?
It's so weird because you kind of step out of time, don't you? So it was probably half a second, but
that was a long. Wow.
I had a moment to go. Let's have a think about how to approach this. You know what I mean? Because I feel like I'm so programmed to just react, be in like a loop of reacting, to be like, no. I was like, I don't know, I haven't mastered that at all. But I feel like that is quite linked to meditation though, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think you're trying to, well, mindfulness is, it's just being mindful of things and not reacting, not doing knee-jerk thing. There's a really great thing that Grant, I was gonna show you a studio, I forgot. He teaches at the Harvey Milk High School. He does an after-school class once a week for kids there, an art class, and they got this training thing about how to deal with, you know, if there's disruption in the classroom and stuff like that, you know, because they're, and if what it is that when the kids are angry or fighting or something, and I've actually done this in a situation that when someone's really angry or in a state, you say, what do you need right now? To the person, and it absolutely roots them and gives you a sort of tunnel towards it, makes them sort of think, oh, what do
they
I
don't
need?
Say, I need to hit you?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, don't ask me that again.
Yeah. What do you think I need? I've done it in situations like where someone's getting a bit obstreperous.
And it works.
It works. I mean, we were talking earlier, like how I've actually found that I'm quite disarming for grumpy old actor ladies who are having a bit of a moment.
And how do you do that?
I go, are you okay? I seem a little upset. Is everything all right? Can I get you anything? Right. You know, I don't pretend it's not happening, which is what most people do. Right. But I don't go, what the fuck's wrong with you, lady? I'm like, is everything all right? You seem a little upset. And do it like that. And so they suddenly are like,
kind.
Oh, what?
Mm. Somebody actually cares about what I think.
Yeah.
Just instant diagnosis.
Because also, a lot of the time when people are pissed off, I've noticed this too, if I'm like in a tizz about something, that when you go into the, you know, and it's affecting what you're doing, when you go into the place to do your thing, all the people can sort of see there's something wrong, but they don't want to say anything because they think it's best to not make the situation any worse. And actually, acknowledging it would really help because then you could say...
Acknowledging.
Yeah.
This is... I have a few heroes. One of them is Phil Glass, and I just love that he, no matter what, just keeps making operas and orchestra things, and he's, you know... And he's so positive. He's the most positive person I know. And I said, how do you deal with stress? I mean, because you have so much stress. And he just said, I acknowledge it. That's it. And that, you know, he's not pushing it away. And it's like my teacher also has really great little things. Like he's a very clear thinker. This guy's name is Mingyur Rinpoche from Nepal. And he just has tiny little things that he tells you to try. And one of them is like, try to practice how to feel sad without actually being sad.
That's good.
That is really key, because there are so many sad things in the world, and if you pretend they're not there, you're an idiot. You know, mm-hmm. they'll come and get you. They'll kill you. Mm. They'll come from behind. But his thing is, look at them, but don't. Above all, and the most important thing about this is, don't become sad.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Are you a Buddhist?
I am, yeah.
What kind?
Well, free form, you know. I follow this guy. I started in the 70s in something called Insight Meditation. And that was, that's a place that I still go to often. That's the one where my phone went in the bag a couple months ago. And I was like, 2,500 messages later, I just. and that's a place that, it's a kind of fairly new Buddhism from about 500 years old from Thailand. And so the whole point of that one is the body. And that, I went there, why did I go there? I went there because a friend said, you know, I just came back from this meditation, 10 days silent meditation, you meditate 18 hours a day. And I am completely different. My mind is like a beam, and I can, the chatter stopped, and I could focus over here and do that. Then I could move it over there and do that. And it wasn't yada, 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 all the, you're such a failure. All the stuff just calmed down, and I could move it. Mm. I said, whoa, I want a mind like a beam. So I went there, and I said,
yeah,
and they said, like, why are you here?
Give us that number.
And they said, you're here because you're in pain, right? I said, no way, I'm here to get a mind like a beam. And they said, no, you're in pain. I said, beam, pain, beam, pain. You know, it was like, it's a very bad way to start. With an argument, you know, this is a Buddhist outfit, so like, I'm here to learn. So what I learned was that it was like that. And that thing based in the way that it's based on the body is that it's basically like every time something happens to you and you don't scream, you don't go, you know, you put it somewhere and you store it and you. And it's amazing how clever your body is about organization.
Absorbing things.
Yeah, and cataloging and filing, so that if you have fear, it's in your stomach, or you know, loss, it goes right to your heart, you know, and you feel it. You know,
yeah.
Or anger goes right to your jaw, you know, and it tightens, and pretty soon you realize how you're routing it. And that you're kind of a library of pain, you know, you just don't know how to get to it. Psychoanalysis gets to it through language, and they kind of go, okay, when was the last time you felt that, or the first time when you were five, or whatever. I'm too much of a word person to trust that storytelling machine. So, because I could make up a story about anything, and like a lot of people, we're just spinning stories, but the body was something else, it's something else, so that you sit there for 18 hours a day, and you get up at 4, you have a little water, and then you meditate, and then you have breakfast, the only meal of the day. And you, because you don't really need much to get through a day if you're just sitting there, like, and then once in a while walking meditation. And then after a while, your whole body is in rebellion, you know, it feels like your scalp is on fire, and your ears are falling off, and your shoulders, like, gone south in a crazy, crooked way, and your feet are asleep and whatever else, and then you focus on those things and you realize you can change them, that you can wake your feet up and understand what's going on in there. And that's related to the stuff that you've stored. So it's really, really wild.
That
and then the
amazing.
Ultimate idea is used Kundalini to push it out. Oh. And those are the adepts. I only felt that once. And that was, I spent the rest of my life trying to find it again. Because Kundalini is a spinal energy that feels like, it feels like you had eyes, but you never opened them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's another level of, or it's probably just like the ultimate heroin spike. I never did heroin, but what I know of heroin is it's the ultimate heroin spike before you like go somewhere else. And it's just, you know,
wow.
It's lightning in your spine. So you learn, theoretically, I don't know how to do this at all, to control that, to go to those parts of your body that are just going, oh, I don't know why I'm feeling bad, but I saw something bad a while ago in my eyes. I just want to open again. So, whatever it is, however that works.
What got you there when that did happen? Was that kind of at the end of a long period of...
Yes, it right. was. I don't know how that works. I mean, some people just do that, and some never do it, and some know how to control it. I don't know how to control it. I've meditated since then, so it would happen again, and it never did.
Do you know, you're reminding me of a book that I haven't read, but I own, of course, called The Body Keeps the Score. Do you know
it? That sounds good.
It's all about
that
what you're...
Like, that sounds like this topic.
Yeah like it's everything that happens to you stays in your body, and a lot of things to do with posture are to do with trauma. So
absolutely.
If you, the way that you stand, someone can look at you and go, well, something has happened that
totally.
You haven't dealt with or whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously, so therefore, obviously, I haven't read the book because I'm like, oh, well, now I'm going to have to deal with it.
But I think that's, I often, you know, when there's some terrible thing happening and some stressful thing, and I've said, I am so furious. You're probably giving me cancer right now because of the stress that you're making.
That's right.
You know, and I do think all illness comes from stress.
Yeah.
And you can feel it sometimes.
You can feel the cancer coming in.
You can feel it when you're just like pissed off or made to, you know, just to be stressed about it so unnecessarily. And it's there's different kinds of stress, obviously, but the stress that you make and stress that you carry, but ones that are from outside are coming at you due to other people's incompetence or whatever.
I feel that every day. I think that it's like almost like I'm being injected unwillingly with poison. For example, I looked at the paper today, I don't have it here, but a full page ad saying if you vote Democratic and you're Jewish, you are disloyal. All page, and I thought, I am fucking Nazi Germany, 1933. There is a big ad taken out by a proud American who said, if you vote Democratic, you are disloyal and ignorant. Just quoting the president. And I was just like, I've just been injected again. You're giving me cancer.
I didn't know that was...
That's in the paper today.
I heard him saying that the other day.
It's in the paper today, and it's beginning to be a meme, and it's starting to be like, a thing, and like Jews cannot be Democrats. Democrats are evil. Democrats are
subhuman.
Ignorant, subhuman. I used to feel sorry for Italians because they were always doing that about Berlusconi. They're like, can you believe what he said?
I was like,
you better believe it now. He's been doing this for years.
Yeah.
You don't just gossip about it. You're like, can you believe? You know, I'm like, okay. He's going to do that and much worse as Trump is. So just don't get so excited about it. He's an asshole. And he's deranged.
Totally.
You know,
mentally ill.
I don't know why people don't acknowledge that. If somebody who says, I'm going to buy Greenland, you're like, what are you, out of your skull? You can't be serious.
Did he say he was the chosen one? He was the chosen one.
He did?
I mean, it's in relation to all Jewish people. You know, if you vote Democrat, you're Jewish,
you're
crazy and a traitor. There's something about he's the chosen one. And then, here we're going down the wormhole.
Wouldn't that be a twist?
If he was actually Jesus.
Don is Jesus, part two. The Jewish Jesus.
Ginger Jesus.
Wow.
The Jewish Jesus.
Cheetah Jesus.
J-J-J-J.
Well, that's what
they
call him in Scotland. Cheetah Jesus.
Cheetah Jesus.
But then if he was Jesus, he'd be nice to people who were different to him.
Very true.
You know, this is the thing I think about. I'm not religious at all.
And he would come back.
Yeah.
He would come back, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm absolutely atheist. But it's so interesting when you get down to it with, you know, the way that people use religion to enable hatred. You know, that my religious freedom is being compromised. And so therefore I think trans people shouldn't be allowed to have rights. You know, things like that, the logic, like what? There was this time when I was at Christmas lunch with some people and it was very awkward because it was all very, you know, political opinions weren't agreed upon. And we're chatting and I said, can I make a toast? And everyone was like, uh-oh. And I said, nobody's mentioned Jesus yet. And it's Christmas Day, it's his birthday. And I think, I totally don't believe in God and blah, blah, blah. I believe in Jesus, he did exist. And I think he was a great guy. He was kind to people who were less fortunate than him. He, you know, he would be a big friend of the gays. It was when gay marriage was being a thing. I said, he was gay, perhaps.
He was gay.
What do you think?
Absolutely.
Hanging out with all those guys.
Oh, absolutely. It was so beautiful and so... tender and gay, so gay. I was like, awesome.
Laurie, I was wondering about this. If someone said, what do you do? What would you say? How would you define yourself in that short way that people do?
I don't.
So what would you say?
Like, yeah.
I work in music, I work in
the arts.
It
would depend on what I was doing at the moment. And I don't really, nobody asked me that when I was a kid, so I never decided, you know? Nobody said, what are you? I had like 7 brothers and sisters. I still do. And it's a mess. So nobody had the time to say, what are you going to be when you grow up?
Right.
So I didn't have a plan because nobody cared. I was just lost in the mix.
What was life like growing up?
Fun.
Yeah?
Fun to be a part of a big crowd. Yeah, it
Did
was
you
fun.
Grow up in Illinois?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, near Chicago. And I had a good time. Then I just started doing various things, and I still wouldn't exactly say what I do. What do you say when you say people? Well, people don't ask you that, or do they?
Some
because people know you and they don't need to ask.
Yeah,
you
and if people ask me, like a taxi driver, and I'm in the back, and they're
yes,
saying,
what do you say?
I'll say I'm a writer. Like if I don't think they know it's me. And I don't want to say I'm an actor because I don't have to say all the things I'm in. And you know that awful thing of you think you know the thing, they'll know, and they go, don't know that. No, what else have you done? You think, oh, come on. I say I'm a writer, and then which is true technically, but and they're less interested in that, you know.
Yeah.
But I would say
you didn't write that, huh? Then you know.
Yeah,
you
no,
nobody's going to that.
But I sometimes say I would say my sort of thing that I. In my mind, I think I would say I'm a storyteller for hire.
For nice. Hire is a good extra like
yes.
bit there's, of information that wasn't
always
requested.
There's always a fee.
Just
so you know.
Self-work. Also, on my Instagram thing, I've changed it recently. It says, you know, you put a little description of yourself under your name.
Yeah.
And mine is top international celebrity and amateur bartender. Because in my bar,
are you really amateur bartender? I mean, what drink do you make best?
Simple drinks. Like I love bartending. Like this
wine
bar,
and water with ice.
I like vodka soda. It's so easy, and I love it.
Okay, what's in that?
Vodka and soda water, and then ice. So I go at the bar. It's my favorite thing to go. I actually go behind the bar because it's sort of. It's a little separation from the people, and you
it's
know,
like it's like a stage.
It's right? like a stage, and it's also there's some you're present, but you're not.
Yeah.
You can't take photos of people.
And
you can't
you're charging money.
And I got money. Yeah, charging. And I'm my favorite. I love doing the screen, pressing the buttons and everything. I love when someone's. I love when someone gives a credit card, and I say, "Do you want to keep it open?" I love saying that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But my I like
love
drinks
that.
That
too. That's a very friendly thing to say, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
It's not how long you're going to be here for a while, right?
Yeah. Surely, yeah. No, I love that. And then I love just like, I love like sometimes, you know, someone's, last night, you know, it was someone's birthday and I can say, drinks on the house. You know?
Oh, that's a nice. Second great thing
yeah.
to say.
It's
and then
so
10
good.
Seconds later, drinks no longer on the house.
Yeah,
no longer,
yeah.
Like to keep it open.
And I love that sort of, I've always wanted to be, it's interesting, like I've always wanted to be a waiter. Or a bartender, or a caterer. Like those things
it's
that...
It's never too late.
No, it's not. Like, right. I'm doing it... I mean, I have a bar now, and when I go to my bar, I go behind the bar and I start serving drinks.
Yeah, great.
And I think the bar staff like it because I help them, and then also I don't take the tips, and they get more tips because it's me.
Nice.
And I'm also quite like when there's someone, you know, if they're like kind of mesmerised that it's me doing it, I'll say, they give me the money, and I'll say, do you want change? Like that, you know. You don't want change, do you? Like that, I kind of cheeky and put more money into the pot for the bar stuff at the end of the night.
That's just like the nicest thing I've heard all day. But you have to keep it open.
Isn't it good?
It's just great. And what about you when people say, what do you do?
I say I'm a director. Okay. So I direct, you know, TV and stuff. So, and I think that it's interesting, the point I'm always coming from when I do anything, if I'm writing or directing or podcasting, is I think I'm always kind of directing in some regard. Right. You know, like
stealing.
Yeah. And I think like I like that. Like I have a memory of being a kid, mm-hmm. and there were these three kids who lived up the road who were much younger than me, a little bit younger than me. And they were having a shit time at home. And I was like, let's throw a party for them in my garden. So
nice. Please, thanks.
So I threw them a little party.
Yeah. Wow, that's a sweet thing to do.
And I gave them this treasure hunt where I hid like my things of mine in this bush, and I was like, nice. You guys, there's presents here, blah blah blah. Yes, it was sweet, but it was also, I was kind of directing them. Do you know what I mean? I was like, you go over there, and then, now you're going to do this. And then, right, everyone over here now. Now you're going to go over there. You know, so it was, so I think in a way that's my route in. Do you remember the first time you created something where in a creative way? And I wondered if it was always ideas that is your kicking off point. It's like you have an idea and that starts the project in whatever form it might take.
Oh, let's see. When you were talking about turning people into actors, and no matter what happened, you took the director's role, I think I liked doing that. I had no dolls because I didn't like dolls, but I did like directing them.
Really?
Yes. So my friends had Barbie dolls, and they would just be like in these like horrible X-shaped patterns all over the room, you know, with their ponytails and their legs like over their heads, and you know, pinwheeling around, I was like, this is a mess. I was just like, and I liked making the dolls do stuff.
Right.
So that I didn't see that so much as creative as just sort of social engineering. You know, the way girls learn very early that they're actually in charge. Mm-hmm. Okay. Ken, do you like my dress? Ken, go over there and sit down. Get in your car, Ken. Do you like this purse, Ken? You're like, what are you learning to do, girls? Mm. You know, manipulate men with your outfits. Mm. I was like, that's cool. Wow. I'm going to just see how that works. I was like, okay, arranging the dolls and seeing if they could like do that. And it's trickier than you think, you know, because you have to really be deep into it as opposed to like take it on as a theater project. And then you have to do things like plot motivation and, you know, have some more elaborate things going on than just pure manipulation of other people. So, creative things probably for me were just, I don't know, puppet shows, probably.
Oh, okay,
Like making puppets.
Wait, I'm curious about when did music, because we're, you know, swatting up on you, and like you went to college and did history.
Yeah, so but I always did music. Music I played when I was five. Oh. We had a family orchestra, I was violin,
okay.
Played the violin, and everyone did something except my father, he was the audience. That moment, and I'm sure you have that too, house to half moment of this anticipation of you're about to have to perform.
Oh yes,
and this is always a weird. It's great that you mentioned that moment when you're like about to go on stage, because that's the one time now I always regret, or not regret, but I don't have stage fright, but I do at that moment think when I'm right behind a curtain, like. And peeking out, thinking, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yes.
Why am I behind the curtain about to pop out and do something? What idiocy? what am I doing this for? And then I pop out and it starts and it's, you know, I don't no longer question it. But there's that moment, yeah, and it's the house to half moment.
It's just awful.
It's just like, what a fraud. And the whole mechanism is so stupid. People waiting and the curtain parts and the, you know, lights go up and you're like, oh, so, man.
Do you know, it's so funny though that I actually now have that as a slight signpost that I'm doing something good. Because it's like, I'm stretching myself, mm-hmm, you know, because, and I always have it, even like when I got on the plane to come here, mm-hmm, I had a little moment like, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's good, because that, okay, means, yeah, yeah, I'm stepping outside my comfort zone and I'm, yeah, exploring,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to think
about it. I mean, it doesn't help in the moment, but it's like, you're like, oh, I remember, I do know that one, come on, remember that.
What,
yeah,
do you do all the day?
I just do projects.
Music things?
Yeah, like now, right now, I'm doing like 15... things, all, wow, unrelated to each other.
I mean, literally 15.
Yeah, pretty much 15 things. Yeah.
And mm-hmm, what? In what? Like making a record or?
I'm making a record, and two records. One is a quartet that I'm finishing, and then another big project for 2.5 years is a big opera.
Ooh.
And it's a huge project. And
you're writing.
Hmm?
You're writing the whole opera.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the project, and then I have these two books that are really hard to write, and I'm working on those a lot, and I'm designing these kind of spatial sound things, which are like lots of speakers, and so you can walk in, and it's like walking into music, because I make a lot of VR now, so I right, do virtual reality stuff. I love VR because you can fly. I love it more than anything. It's just so much fun. We just showed one at the Museum of Natural History here on the moon, because we did one about the moon. I'd love to show it to you sometime, anytime you want to see fly on the moon things. And then I have a big show at the Hirshhorn in DC, and I'm making huge paintings right now. I have a big studio at the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Oh, you do?
Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
And then I'm also trying to get citizenship for somebody that I worked with 3 years ago. So I just got back from Morocco, where I went to see him. He was the youngest detainee at Guantanamo. Mm. And he was a collaborator on a piece that I did 4 years ago, or three, yeah, years ago. So what they do when they detain them is they immediately declare you a non-person, which means you have no rights.
A non-person.
Non-person. That's, wow, the very first thing. Works with language. The second thing is we couldn't say what was really happening there, which was that American doctors and psychiatrists were at every torture session supervising what could be done and making sure that it was done to the max. And we were allowed to say American behavioral science teams were at each session with the detainees. So you never would use the word torture. So anyway, Mohammed was went through a huge number of things, and he was finally released and not exonerated because he was never charged. That's the trick. Anyway, his life since then has been, and I lost touch with him, and then about a month ago I found him again. And he's been deported 10 times because we make sure that he never can have citizenship anywhere after Guantanamo. You know, so that he's shipped back to his country of origin, which he never lived in, Chad. And if you look at what happened in Chad, it's not great. It's tribal warfare, and his tribe is not in power anymore. So when he's shipped back to Chad, they throw him in prison and torture him again, for being in Chad and for being in Guantanamo and just for being. If you look back in the 80s, you can see Gaddafi tinkering around in Chad. You can see a lot of bad things going on there. It's a crazy situation. So anyway, I went over there. I got back a few days ago, and I brought him up.
You went to Chad?
No, I went to Morocco, where he is now. And because he's living on the floor of a mosque, he's really poor. He married a Moroccan woman, but she's so poor that he can't say, he can't tell his in-laws that he's been in Guantanamo. So he's, like, there are various ways that you, there's a guy called the General who is also in Tangier, who's a big chef, and he's British, and so he had an easier job because Britain was not as vindictive as other people. So Yemen was the best, so the Yemen prisoners were not allowed to come back to Yemen, but they can stay in Morocco, and Yemen gives them money and a house and citizenship. Not citizenship, but they care for them. And the British guys, they still had to serve 15 years. And this guy that wrote the book, The General, because that was his name, that the guards gave him, because he was the spokesman for everybody. He was a very smart guy. And he said, you know, he spoke for the detainees, and he was really, he's hilarious. And his book, The General, is really wonderful. But all of those guys were, you know, they were in jail for, I mean, I can't call it jail. It's just, they were, it was hell. It wasn't jail. It was just like, in February, I'm going to represent this piece in the Hirshhorn, not as a live streaming thing, but as a playback thing of him wrapped onto the statue and talking to you about Guantanamo and saying, things like, just crazy things that happened there. Like, one of the detainees told one of his guards one time that he had a dream that a submarine came to rescue everybody in Guantanamo. And that night, Guantanamo Bay was filled with American helicopters and ships looking for the submarine this guy had dreamed about.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, this thing is a dark dream. It's insane. It's still there.
Wow.
I mean, the whole mechanism is the more you find out about it, the worse it gets, actually, you know. And that's one of the things I just decided. A friend of mine said, why don't you do those as paintings? And I was like, I don't know if I can do it. One of the things I'm going to do for this show is make really big paintings of this, because I don't think people can visualize what this is, you know, what we do.
Purposefully, because we're not allowed to. I mean, thing that I keep, when I think about Guantanamo, is that it's a base in a country that we have blocked. Right? So it's a place that we can't. I mean, you can go, America, and also Americans have been brainwashed about going to Cuba for all these years. You actually could go, and everyone's like, oh, and they don't want, you know, and I went a year ago, actually, maybe 2 years ago.
It's hard to say that we're just brainwashed. I mean, how idiotic can we be? You know, doesn't anyone want to ask any questions? It's like, it's really scary place to be living right now, I think.
I mean, I said, I feel like, I wonder when the point comes when you think,
What if it never comes?
What if it never comes?
You know, because what if it's just a frog in boiling water? You know, it's like, a lot of my friends have left. They live in Ireland, they live in Iceland, they're going, you know, and I'm like, I'm not really one to leave a sinking ship, but this is really a sinking ship, this one. This is not a great situation.
And also, when's going to be the, what I feel is, when will the point come where I will feel threatened?
Even? Exactly. And make it, like, not worth it to be here. But then where exactly do you go?
I'm going to Scotland.
Scotland's very nice,
I have a wee place there, and I just... I've been quite a few times over the last few months, and it just fills me with such happiness. And, and you know, like last year when I was doing up my wee cottage, I went to the... this is so tragic. I went to the recycling centre and I cried.
Why?
Because I was so proud of the amount of, like, the detailed recycling and all the things you could do and the batteries and all the things. And I just thought, this is great. My country is really concerned about recycling and renewable energy and all these things. And I just, like, come back here. You know, try recycling a battery in New York City.
Really?
Yeah, right. It goes on the same heap of everything else.
Yes. And you call up 311 or whatever it's called and try and find, you know, it's just so difficult.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. It's painful.
We don't
and then, like,
do
they
it.
Want, if you don't have the right bag, they won't take. I mean, this place
we
was
pretend,
amazing. Like, right. I piled everything from all the, like, cleaning up my house. And there was all these different, metal things here and wooden things and like, you know, formica, la la la. It was just so, I actually cried in the recycling
center. That's very sweet.
I love that.
Yeah. It was such fun.
It was really fun.
Brilliant. Well done.
That was lovely, wasn't it? Lovely, Lordy Anderson.
Wasn't it lovely?
I mean, just what a darling person.
a privilege to talk to somebody like her, because she really doesn't do any press whatsoever. Look her up, follow her work. You will always be entertained and inspired, I would say.
Write to us, would you?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Hello at homosapienspodcast.com.
Correcto.
And subscribe to get us in your mailbox all the time.
Absolutely.
And if you want a t-shirt, go to alancumming.com/shop
or everpress.com/homosapiens. Or if you rate and review on Apple Podcasts, you could win a t-shirt if you tune in to Homo Sapiens Extra. We choose our favourite review and we give away a t-shirt. Goodness me. I feel like the mothership providing for everybody here.
That was exhausting.
Isn't it just? Time for a line.
This was lovely. This was a lovely interview. I really liked that.
Yeah, me too.
Enjoyed this time with you all.
I've really enjoyed it as well. Thank you for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.